Me. Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Okay, everybody, I don't know what the fuck is going up with my intro. This happens to me all the time. It's technical fluff with Tuke Edelo, but you're listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. So I feel like it's very like anticlimactic to not have my goddamn intro, but whatever. Fuck the fucking intro. Nobody needs intros. Intros are just like people trying to kill time before they have to go on the radio, so they have an extra minute to get their thoughts together. But whatever. You're listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. My name is Tuke Edelo. Last week we discussed a little bit about Me Too, and if you don't know what Me Too is, it was this hashtag thing that went around the internet where women and people of all kinds were discussing instances of sexual assault and abuse, and just basically coming forward and saying, this is real, this is a motherfucking epidemic, and we're not making this shit up. And it's supposed to have sparked like this thing where now we're supposed to be aware that this shit happens to everybody. Or happens to like a lot of people. And I'm just like really annoyed that my intro isn't motherfucking working. All right. This is like really fucking pissing me off. Like what the fuck, yo? Like why? Why? All right. Anyway, any fucking way. So I'm a survivor, and I started thinking about like, what would a world look like that takes care of survivors? What would it be like if people didn't baby us or just try to deal with us so they don't have to deal with us anymore? You know, I came up with this list, and I urge you to hashtag survivor liberation. So what would survivor liberation look like? So some people use the word victim and other people use the word survivor. I have used victim before because I'm trying to get people to understand where I'm coming from, that I feel like I have been victimized in a number of scenarios, and I feel like I have been ignored and that my needs have been totally, totally pushed to the side. And so I feel like a victim. But a survivor would be someone who survived it and got to the other side regardless of any help from anybody else. So I feel like that's incredibly important to address. So let's talk about what survivor's liberation is to me. So you do not have to speak about your experience if you do not want to, but you will not be silenced if you choose to. Number two is being believed. I think it's like so disrespectful to the person's sanity to not believe them, to just be like, oh, you couldn't possibly be telling the truth about this. Like, oh, like you're just crazy. Oh, you're just upset. Oh, the minimization. What people don't realize is that minimization is part of abuse. Is that minimization is what makes abuse so traumatizing. Yes, there's the physical aspect. Yes, there's the part of people being mean to you or being awful to you. But there's also the part of just like actively being told, this isn't real. This isn't actually happening to you. You're full of shit. Like that is incredibly, incredibly traumatizing. And, I also think that so that number three is not having your experience minimized by a what about of another person's experience. Like, what about this? What about da 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 da? Like, have you ever thought about da 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 da? Like, what about if the other person feels this? No. Like, yes, sometimes it's completely valid to have questions about a scenario, but it doesn't necessarily mean like you need to ask them about it in the instance where they're talking about it. Or you need to minimize their experience by saying, oh, this other person had a worse experience than you. Because I don't think that helps anybody. I really don't. And okay, so number four is being allowed to heal at your own speed. Like you don't know, there's nobody pushing you to heal at a speed that you don't feel comfortable with. And five is never being told, not right now, unless it's by someone else who's a survivor and is feeling triggered. So it's just like, The big problem I had with this Me Too thing is a lot of people were saying that men shouldn't be sharing their experiences of abuse and sexual assault, and that it was actually like just for women. And yeah, they should talk about it, but not right now. And I think that is such a terrible precedent to set, because to tell someone you're finally comfortable coming forward with this terrible, terrible experience you have, but no, you actually shouldn't be talking about it. That is a horrid, horrid thing to ask of somebody to do, to just be quiet simply because it's supposed to be a woman's movement right now. I think that is absolutely fucking disgusting. And my guest Sarah has just walked in. We're gonna see if we can get this intro to work on this other thing. Or is it my fucking laptop? I don't understand what the fuck is going
on. Gun control.
Here we go. There's my fucking intro. Let's play it. Here we go. What is happening? There we go. What would save the world?
Veganism.
Gun control.
Ending capitalism.
Consensus.
More guns.
Nonviolent communication.
Energy.
Green energy.
Spirituality.
Law regulation.
Emotional education.
End the war.
Libertarianism.
On drugs.
Socialism.
I'm Tuke Edelo, and this is
What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m.
I'm so happy I got to play the intro. I don't know. It was like freaking me the fuck out. It was like honestly like it was giving me a conniption. I was like, what the fuck? Like, I can't introduce my show with my little thing. Like, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it to any of you. Sometimes people, you get in these little habits and shit. So finally, my guest is here. I already went over half my list of survivors liberation. But basically, I'm sure you understand what some of it would be. I was talking about, like, the importance of being believed, the importance of being not being minimized, the importance of not having to experience, like, what about, and never being told it's not right now unless it's somebody who's feeling triggered by it. So I'm gonna get through my list and then we'll talk. Let me put on your mic though, so you feel free to cut me off and interrupt and talk and shit. That is your mic.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay. Okay. So number six is those who are willing to be there for survivors are there for them regardless of demographic or gender. Especially because Me Too, if you don't know, was not actually just this hashtag thing. That's what it became in the past. Like, couple weeks, but before that is actually a movement that was started by Tarana Burke, a woman of color, that was supposed to be like a Me Too, like a solidarity movement for victims of sexual assault and abuse. And that's actually been very minimized, and it wasn't brought up until Rose McGowan brought it up, or was it? But was it Milano, one of the fucking Charm girls. So
because Rose McGowan was also a victim of Weinstein's sexual abuse, so she felt like it was, you know, necessary to kind of like emphasize the importance of like, hey, it's not just like, it's about sisterhood. It's about women lifting each other up. It's about being a person that says even this as simple a thing as, hey, I believe you, like, and how huge that is and how we need to lift each other up no matter, you know, who we are.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think it is telling that this movement started 10 years ago, and only when a white woman brings it up, it gets listened to. So that's the point I'm making. It's like, regardless of demographic or gender. So then seven, I have not having to fit into some savior's definition of what a good survivor should act like or be like. And this ties in with the next one that I have, is not having to not being treated like you're like a small child or like a sad child. Like, I feel like a lot of people treat, and that's why using the term victim isn't always great, even though I've used it, but I think using the term survivor. I'm a survivor. Yeah. Okay, we're totally gonna play that song.
I actually I did this show with it was at the, oh man, I'm forgetting her name right now.
Just keep going.
Okay. With Carrie Wurst. I did the show.
Carrie Wurst.
Yes.
Okay. No. Well, we're not going to talk about Carrie Wurst because Carrie Wurst is, I'm not afraid to say this on the radio, Carrie Wurst has minimized so many fucking women's experiences.
All right. Fair enough.
But anyway, tell me about
the
show.
I did kind of tell my story about the first time that I was sort of, you know, a survivor of a person who, you know, raped, assaulted, beat me to the point where I had cracked ribs. And if it had gone further, I could have, you know, potentially died. And, you know, but like, And that shit is hard to talk about. And especially, like, you know, you're on this show, like, it's supposed to have, like, sort of this, like, funny angle to it. And, like, at the end of it, I played that fucking Eye of the Tiger song and I just danced around, you know? I was just like, you know, like, but, like, we fucking, like, we survived, you know? Like, I know that's, like, super corny, but it's, like, you know, sometimes, and I guess I would say, like, as a comedian, as a person who kind of, like, uses art as, like, this vehicle to, like, process trauma, it's, like, important to fucking, like, write some sad poetry, like, fucking feel bad, like, make a joke about it, like, fucking process it however you feel like you need to process it. Like, there isn't one fucking, like, right way to process trauma. Like, everyone deals with it differently, you know? And, like, it's just important to have just, like, something that you do for yourself that makes you feel better about it. Whether it be lifting someone up, whether it be, like, volunteering at, like, a battered women's shelter, whether it be doing comedy or, like, anything like that. Like, whatever makes you feel better is great. It's important.
Exactly. And that's exactly the point I'm trying to make when I'm talking about, like, don't treat survivors like they're small children. Like,
oh, poor baby. It's,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Well, help, no, I'm actually strong as hell.
Help survivors find the things that they need if you're going to be their supporter, or ask them right. What the fuck they need.
Exactly. Or right. If you have gone through that, be like, hey, here's a resource. Here's, like, the fucking Sinai Center is amazing. It's a free service. I can talk to a therapist for free. I can call her on the phone. Like, even that shit, like, you know, there, I feel like there's such, like, a stigma against, like, you need to, like, talk to someone because, like, meh. Like, I feel like that, you know, even, like, that whole idea of, like, asking for help, like, I feel like that's the strongest thing ever. Like, is realizing, like, oh shit, like, I need, you know, you went through something very traumatic and very harmful, and it, like, you could be a danger to yourself. Like, you can start doing some really, really, like, self-destructive things to yourself because, like, you kind of, like, you know, you go through a lot of things. But, like, these women at the Sinai Center, like, not only are they there 24/7, but they have, like, group therapy, like, where you can talk to other women who have felt similar things, and you're just like, wow, you know, I'm not alone in this. Like, we're yeah. Not fucking alone, and there are resources out there.
So exactly. And I think another thing is so I have number 8 is never having to be in the presence of your abuser, and number 9 is your community supporting your decisions around that,
right?
And I think also number 10 is, like, creating, but I like calling it survivors liberation, because, like, groups, things like the Sinai Center, that's amazing, but I don't mm-hmm. feel like we have, like, a regular culture of dealing with trauma and dealing with abuse, where I think we live in an abusive culture on a micro and macro level. Like, just the fact that, like, there's, like, you know, threats to take care of healthcare, or, like, when a Black Lives Matter activist bashes a window, like, that's considered to be so terrible. But even though, but nobody's fucking paying attention to the fact that there is high ass prison stats. You know what I'm saying? Like, this, like, weird.
No, the prison industrial complex is a fucked up thing. And it's been, like, it's like, systematic oppression in general is just, like, fucked up, and it shouldn't be okay. And we should open a dialogue.
I guess, yeah. But the point I'm making is, like, it's like gaslighting. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Like, oh, like, you bashed a window, like, oh, that's such a big deal. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's your fault. Like, it's, we didn't listen to you when you were just talking about it. But now that when you bash a window, we're just going to put you, now you're in more trouble. You know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. That's a very right. abusive thing. But then also creating a culture where it's perfectly acceptable to express your emotional needs around trauma, like at work, like survive. So I just think that right now I see in a lot of communities, in the comedy community, in a lot of different communities, in arts communities, people just being like, oh, well, like, I'm not really involved in that, and that's unprofessional, so I just don't really know. And
I did get a message like that.
Actually. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to touch on what's going on with you, but in terms of that, but I just think that, like, it's a lot of, like, I don't know if this is good professionally, like, if you don't want to tell, especially when, like, people don't want to say everything that's happened to them, they're not ready to reveal the whole thing. People, like, pressure right. them to talk about it, and they're like, well,
it's not easy to talk about.
Yeah, it's like, if you can't tell me, then
they think you're, like, you know, crying wolf or something. They're like, oh, whoa, you must be, like, doing this for attention, or, like, oh, you know, it's October, it's a witch hunt, like, what, you know, what are you doing? Like, he's such a great guy and like this and that. And yeah, they like they minimize your experience. And it's just like, how can you possibly know what I'm going through when you did not experience this firsthand? And like, how can you, like, especially as a person, like the person that sent me that message, like has been a survivor of like this kind of thing. And like, you know, tells me like, well, you know, I think you should do this and I think you should do that. And blah, blah, blah. And like, you know, if you want to have a career in comedy or like if you want to be a performer, like, you know, I don't think this is like the picture you want to like paint of yourself. And it's just like, what the fuck? Like, I didn't do this like.
Yeah.
To like fucking, you know, like get booked on shows. Like, I honestly wrote this piece like I was, you know, like, you know, the Weinstein thing was happening, the Me Too was happening, you know, and like, and as a person who has already gone through something like that, like it is triggering and it makes you like think about your like past relationships and like what has happened and like what went wrong. And, you know, when like you were clear headed, like what you wrote, like, you know, like the things that he did wrong and like everything like that. And it's like, I wrote this just for me. Like, I wrote it for me, and I was just so angry, and I was just like, you know, it's you go through all these like crazy emotions. You're just like, how could I let this happen again when I said I wouldn't let this happen again? And it's like, how did I fucking get to this place when I was like lifting myself up again? Like, fucking just, like, why do I keep like kind of like repeating these sort of cycles? And like you go through that shit and then you're just like, wait, like, no, like there were, you know, when like someone, you know, he like came to my apartment like after I got out of the hospital, like after I was fucking like raped and almost beaten to death. And like, I'm sorry, but like men like that, like abusive men, like, I mean, yes, he didn't hit me, but like abusive men, like emotionally abusive men, which can be sometimes even worse than physical abuse, because if the dialogue in your head isn't great, then like that makes you feel even worse, especially if you're like kind of like predisposed to like anxiety, depression, like any of that stuff, like that can be even more harmful. And it's just like,
and that's why I think
that's not okay. Like, and you should be held accountable like for your actions and not like, you know, go around saying like woe is me and she broke me and all this and like she's lying or like I don't, it's just like, do you think this was easy for me to write? Like I fucking had the worst couple days like after I wrote that, like, because I mean I only really got like one kind of like not okay message that upset me, but like all of these other women that like I didn't even know come to me being like I had a similar story and like that was really like courageous and inspiring, like all this stuff. So like I had all these like conflicted feelings, like, you know, I did this for me and I feel like shit, but like, you know, maybe this could, you know, help another person who is like in the community to sort of warn them of like, hey, like, you know, it's not a good idea to get like wrapped up in this guy because like he's not gonna treat you right. Like, it's like, if my story or my experience can like help someone, like to help lift them up or help them, like, you know, look at their own life and do things for themselves, like self-care, like all that stuff, like if my experience can help someone that way, like then absolutely. It was like, that was kind of like, that was why I put it public. Like, it wasn't to drag him or to ruin his reputation. Like, it was honestly, I've always been that person. Like, I've always just fucking had my heart just wide open and on my sleeve and just like have had really like,
and there's not really a culture of that. There's not really a culture of people being allowed to have those kinds of feelings, and they often get treated like they're crazy or minimized. And like I said, like, especially for emotional abuse, because my experience as a survivor is of emotional abuse.
Right.
Like, it's like a lot of people just being like, oh, well, maybe that wasn't what you think it was. Maybe you're just upset. But it's like, don't you understand that the very basis of the abuse itself was being so unsure if it was really happening?
Right.
And like that weird double think. It's very painful, and I think that people need to be aware of how prevalent it is.
And it's like, oh, well, I mean, like he said one thing to me. He was like, well, your ex before me.
Who's he? You're the person. Okay. Just be clear. I'm not sure people are clear of what we're talking about. So Sarah wrote this article about her most recent ex who was abusive and like gaslighty and shitty. And a lot of people have been having some backlash about it. And what I do want to move on to soon is how can communities deal with this kind of thing. But continue.
Yeah, I mean, I've always just wanted to help people, like in some way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like, even like, I mean, I went home this weekend too, and like, even, you know, my stepmom was just like, even when you were younger, like all your friends would like go to you for advice and stuff, and like, you know, want to like you could give that advice, like you wanted to help, like you did that, and like, but there were times when, you know, sometimes, you know, sometimes I kind of laugh at myself. I'm just like, man, if I could only take my own advice, like I would be golden, you know. Like I would be great. This would never fucking happen again. Like I said, like I felt so conflicted because I felt so shitty, and like all these women are like, you're so fucking inspiring and this and that, and I'm just like, I don't feel this way because like when someone tells you that like you're crazy and you're not good and you're bad and you're whatever, like you start to believe that stuff. Like you start to believe it yourself, and like, that's so fucking harmful. Like that's so just not okay, you know? Like you should be with a person that loves you and supports you, like no matter what, you know? Like like I don't know. It's like, and that's like, I feel like any like kind of healthy relationship, it's like,
So
even with yourself, it's like you have to change that dialogue, like have a positive mantra, like try, you know, hearing, being like in an atmosphere that is like not good for you mentally or physically is very detrimental.
And I think that's exactly what is going to help. What is going to help liberate us is to have people keep sharing stories like the ones you're sharing, and also keep sharing like ideas of how to heal and how to heal each other, or how to heal ourselves, actually. Mm-hmm. Because it's the thing about it is like the whole, I read this amazing article last night about indigenous matriarchy. Mm-hmm. About you know, it's one thing to say I believe you, but it's another thing to be like, oh, I believe me. And I think that might be part of why, and I'm not trying to say that we should blame ourselves in this way, but that might be why there's so many instances of people staying in these relationships, also because it's really manipulative and brainwashy. But like,
mm-hmm.
just to, when you first notice it, to be like, well, maybe not.
Right.
Learn how to just believe yourself and know that. But also I want to talk about
and
how to
kind of see those signs, like,
exactly,
you know, not to quote BoJack Horseman, but I do watch that. But it's like, you know, he was in a relationship with this new girl, and you know, she was really great, and you know, he's like, you know, you shouldn't date me and I'm horrible. And she was just like, well, I guess, you know, when you have these rose colored glasses, like all these red flags just look like flags. And it's like, when you're so close to it and you're like, you know, maybe you went through a horrible thing and like you're falling in love and like it seems so great. It's like you kind of like push those like little like microaggressions and those like, you know, and you like forgive easily because you're just like, wow, like I can't believe like someone would love me despite all my baggage. Like, wow, I'm the luckiest girl. Like, it's,
yeah, and that
sucks, you know.
It's, that's like totally part of our patriarchal culture of women, yeah, feeling like they're nothing, like they're kind of like they're as valuable as men see them. But so something I really want to touch on, because we have, yes, Irina calling in a minute. So I really want to get to this. So how do you think communities should deal with abuse? And I don't know if you're okay with talking about this. So you can tell me if you're not. But so there are people who also consider this person you wrote about to be their friend. How would you like them to deal with the article you wrote? How would you like them to take accountability? Or how would you like them to hold accountability on him? Because so I feel like, you know, there are different scenarios. There's different ways of dealing with this. I am an advocate for restorative justice. I don't know if you're familiar with what that is. That's like where communities sort of like develop different like advocacy, people who advocate for different people and help maintain peace. Like, or like maybe like there's a lot of different ways this could look. Like one of them would maybe be like somebody informs him when you're going to be someplace and he decides to leave, or
right.
or if both of you are okay with it, you agree to have a meeting and work out what would justice look like for you. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So I'm saying, like, how would you like this to be approached?
This actually happened last night. I went to see a comedy show at Under St. Mark's, and I, you know, Tess Henry, who works at the theater as well, I told her to kind of keep an eye out, to let me know if she saw him or if he was there, you know, just so, you know, because, you know, I don't think it's fair that, like, because of what I went through, I shouldn't be allowed to see things at that theater, you know, that is also my community. So, I mean, I think that that is important, like, to have, like, to kind of, like, have people have your back, like, okay, like, I'll just give you a heads up, like, when he's going to be around. And, like, I also think it's important for his friends to call him out on his shit, you know, to be kind of like, hey, you know, you have a drinking problem. Like, you ever think about getting help? Like, to kind of like, to for his friends to reach out to him and be like, hey, like, I think you have a problem. And, like, you know, do you want to talk about it? Like, do you want to go to therapy? Like, do you want to, like, do this? Like, I think that, you know, he's not, like, an evil man. Like, he just has some problems. Like,
and it's important to make the distinction that some men who commit these acts are not necessarily evil, but they're fucked up, and you should maybe never allow them in spaces again. For example, Lloyd Floyd, you should never let him anywhere.
And it's like, you know, just taking ownership, like, for your shit. Like, take ownership, you know? It's just like, I don't know if he would be like a danger to people. I mean, I know that because we were in a relationship, like, it was definitely not good for me. I mean, I think that other women should know about how he is and how he kind of, like, jumps from one thing to another. And, like, you know, like, as we were, like, starting our relationship, he was, like, still hanging out with his ex-girlfriend, who he was, you know, said some pretty horrible things to. And I feel bad about not believing her when she was trying to tell me these things. And
yeah, that's always the thing. Believe each other. Believe each other. Like, there's a girl that so my ex, Connor Dawson, whose name I will always say, they were dating a new girl, and I messaged her and I was like, look, like, heads maybe up. He's changed. And she was like, I think it's gonna be fine. But then later on, we actually ran into each other. She was like, you were right, and now we're friends. So that's really important, to listen to each other. And, like, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes abusers do change and do try to seek help, but
right.
I also think I think it's incredibly important to be aware of the person, of the survivor, when you do things like this. Because I had an experience where one of my very good friends, without telling me, decided to take on the responsibility of advocating for my ex, when originally she had been kind of an advocate for me. And it was incredibly triggering for me. And this was years later. And, like, I had, like, a fucking breakdown and lost my shit. And it destroyed
horrible.
A lot of relationships. And yeah. So I think that if you're going, I urge you, if you're ever going to look into restorative justice, which can be done, it can be done so many ways. Look up restorative justice. It's a way to deal with instances of assault or abuse within communities. And I think that it depends. You know, both the person who's committed the act of abuse and the person who is the survivor have to consent to it. And it always has to be, never ever pressure a survivor into doing something like this, because then that just becomes more abusive, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
And I think that also something important to address is that sometimes in these situations, both people feel abused.
Mm-hmm.
And that's valid also. And and people say things like that. They'll be like, oh, just because both people feel abused and it's not really abuse. I'm like, it's not so black and white like that.
It's absolutely not. I feel like, you know, in a relationship, it takes, you know, there are two parties who, you know, it's like, what I realized too is that I'm like, you know, I have I also have my own issues as well. And like, maybe together, it's like sometimes when you're like with a person and you have like some similar issues, like it can just sort of like, you know, just kind of like
you can mirror each other. But I want to say that Irina is calling in right now. Irina,
hello,
can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, Irina, we're here with Sarah right now, and I don't know if you've been listening to the episode, but we've been talking to a bunch. I mean, I don't care if you have. I'm just saying, like, but we're talking about a bunch of different stuff. So, Irina, we were gonna talk about a bunch of different shit. How are you doing? First of all, welcome to What Would Save the World.
Thank you. I'm okay right now. I can't promise I'll be okay in 10 minutes. I wasn't okay 10 minutes ago, but let's just give it a try and see what happens.
Okay, so Sarah and I have been talking about like abuse and people believing people and like what survivors' liberation would look like in terms of like communities being able to take care of each other in these instances. And so you were talking to me a little bit about a recent experience you've had and how like rationalization that goes on. Is we've been talking about a lot about that, about how survivors minimize themselves a lot, and that's why when people don't believe you, it's so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. So what happened was last Tuesday, my ex-boyfriend beat me up really bad in Colorado, in Pagosa Springs. I was trying to just be friends with him, and he invited me to kind of road trip through Colorado for the month. So I sublet my apartment, my room, and I went out there with him, and I should have thought about the possibility of him beating me because he used to do that when we were actually together.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, I thought that if you took the sex out of the relationship and the romance out of the relationship, that we wouldn't have that problem. We wouldn't have the jealousy and the controlling issues.
Mm-hmm.
But that turned out to be not the case. Like, for the first 2 weeks, it was okay. And then we went out to a bar in the middle of the mountains, and I ran into a fellow Russian there. And we were both fluent Russian speakers, and I was like, holy shit, what the fuck? This is awesome. And so I was talking to him a lot, and my ex got really upset about this. He tried to get me jealous with the bartender. Then he left the bar, and he wouldn't speak to me for the next, like, 2 days except to be passive-aggressive. And when I finally confronted him about it, he was like, you ditched me at the bar, which is like, bro, you left. You left. You ditched me. And then if I was a guy, if I was your best friend, Charlie, and not Irina, your ex-girlfriend who you used to stick your dick in, would you consider that ditching if Charlie stayed at the bar when you were ready to go and he wasn't? Would you be passive-aggressive towards him? No. Nobody is passive-aggressive towards their friend for leaving the bar. It's because he thought he had some sort of control over me. And so I thought after that happened, I was like, maybe I should leave. Maybe I should hitchhike to Denver and just fly away, fly home. Mm-hmm. I'll figure it out. Maybe I'll like couch surf or whatever. But I didn't. And I stayed. He was, you know, doing all those little like nice, mild gestures to let me know that he doesn't want to fight anymore. And I was like, it'll be easier to just ride it out. And if anything, if he continues being a passive aggressive dick, I could always, you know, like hitchhike away the next day. And I didn't think to myself that maybe it'll be more, maybe it'll escalate to something beyond being a passive aggressive dick. And it did. We went to a bar and we were excited because like we decided to like, you know, sweep everything under the rug and just like try being friends again. And we got to Pagosa Springs, and Pagosa Springs was beautiful and incredible, and it was sunny. And we booked a place to stay for 2 nights, and we went to the bar. And then I met this girl there who was really cool, and she was also kind of like alternative lifestyle and like hippie-go-lucky type of thing. And we were vibing really nice, and I got too drunk and blacked out because I didn't have any lunch. I had 2 donuts for breakfast, and apparently the elevation in the mountains apparently has something else to do with how drunk people get, but that's besides the point. So basically what happened was I blacked out, And the next thing I wake up to is, I don't know if anyone has ever gotten their face punched in, like in the nose, but when you get punched in the nose, there's like this feeling, it's like cold wave almost that just like sweeps across your face. And that woke me up out of my blackout. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And and he's holding me by my hair, like on top of my head, and punching me repeatedly in the face. And I'm like kind of curled up by the door of the van. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And he's laughing at me. And like, this is the thing that I remember the most about it, is that he was laughing at me, you know, while he was doing this, while he was beating my face in repeatedly, like my nose and my mouth and my eye. And he was like kicking my ribs. At one point, he had me by the throat. And I'm trying to, like, you know, crawl away and stuff to the door. And he's just laughing. He's, like, sneering at me, like, who the fuck do you think you are? Are you fucking serious? Are you fucking serious right now? And I don't know how I got away from him. I think that's when he pulled out my hair, because I have, like, bald patches from where my hair is missing. And I don't know if that's because I finally wrenched myself away and like got out of the van, but I remember, you know, crying hysterically and running barefoot away from the van. And there was a guy who pulled up into the gas station nearby, and he's like, "Whoa, are you okay?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Let me take you to the hospital." And he took me to the hospital, and I guess he called the cops. But the thing about like rationalization, because he was arrested afterwards. He was arrested later that night, and the victim advocates were really good. They found me a place to stay, and they got me some food and stuff. But the thing about rationalization is that, like, when I was at the hospital, I was worried about everybody believing me. You know, I kept on, like, looking at the cop, and he was like, I know that he was trying to be professional and stuff like that, but he was just like so cold. And I was just like, I'm not trying to get him into trouble. Like, I'm not trying to get anyone into trouble for no reason, you know, like, why would you do this to somebody if you tell them, if you like claim to love them, you know what I mean? Like, that makes no sense to me. And I was just, I didn't understand. And I'm like, I'm not trying to get anyone into trouble. And I was, the fact that I had to say that, you know, in itself, and then the cop took like one picture of my face, like he didn't look for any other bruises on my body. They didn't take a CAT scan of my head, even though like I was, you know, I was all banged up on my head and my face. They didn't do that. And the whole, and then they discharged me like an hour later, which I don't know how this works. You know, like this has never, I've never gone to the hospital or to the police when he beat me before. So I don't know if that's just like supposed to be the procedure, but if it is the procedure, I think that's kind of fucked up, because what if I had a concussion?
Oh no,
what if
you're absolutely right.
During my blackout, you know, nobody took a rape kit. I don't know. I have no idea if there was anything in my vagina during that time, because I was blacked out. And the cop told me, he's like, "Do you remember me from the bar?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Yeah, I was at the bar that you were at before with Robert, with the guy." And he's like, "You were really drunk and really belligerent, and you were making out with like a girl. Apparently I straddled Robert at a point and made out with him. And when I found that out, like, oh my God, it still makes me feel disgusting, you know?" And like, and I just like, I immediately thought to myself, I'm like, there you go. I was making out with everybody. I was drunk. I was a hot mess. He's thinking
what,
right
so
now
that
like
means
when
you
we
deserve
got back,
that you absolutely don't.
It's like one of those things where I feel like our entire culture is just based off of wanting to call women liars and irrational. If you just look at the famous like story of creation, that's what happens, is like Eve eats this apple and destroys the entire universe. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's just,
yeah,
there was even
it's
this
the same
other
way that like it's the same way that doctors don't, like when you tell them, when they ask a woman how bad is the pain and you tell them a 7, they assume you mean a 5, you know, because they assume that you're trying to like make it sound worse than it really is. And that's how I feel like since this happened, I feel like I've been kind of like fighting against that. Like, and even if it's not real, like, even if I don't know that the person I'm talking to is thinking to themselves, like, yeah, but this bitch is probably exaggerating. Even if I don't know that, I still feel like it's a possibility, a huge probability that they're thinking that I made it up, you know? And, like, the thing with the law is that if there's no, like, lasting bodily damage, and this mm-hmm. is what I found out, like, mm-hmm. in my process after this, yep. is that if there's no broken bones or anything like that, there's really, it's a misdemeanor, first of all, mm-hmm. which Ugh. Means that if he leaves the state and he gets arrested somewhere else after, you know, just ditching the trial, they're most likely not going to extradite him for a misdemeanor, mm-hmm. you know, unless it's a felony. And the fact that, like, they didn't, you know, they didn't do a CAT scan, they didn't check to see if, like, I had been strangled. I only found out about that afterwards from the victim's advocates, to Rise Above Violence. It was, oh my God, they were the best. I love them so much.
What are they called?
Rise Against Violence.
Okay. Keep going.
Yeah. They're the only ones who didn't drop the ball. They were the only ones who were super thorough, you know? Like, mm-hmm. she told me to go back to the hospital because she's like, you know, you have marks on your throat, like two on one side and then like one on the other under my jaw, mm-hmm. which is like a handprint. And then my throat hurts, not like a cold, but like my neck, like the muscles themselves. And my voice was all fucked up. Like I couldn't speak. I couldn't like even like it was like a squeaky kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And she was like, you didn't sound like this before. And I'm like, no way. And like even right now, like I sound a little bit hoarse and stuff like that, but at that point it was a lot worse. And she's like, it looks like you were strangled. And I was like, well, yeah, he had his hands around my neck at one point. And she's like, go back to the hospital and like put that in the hospital records, because that would raise it from a misdemeanor to a felony. And I did, and they still didn't charge him with a felony. And then on top of that, they didn't come talk to me about like his history or like how long he's been living in Colorado. And they let him out on a personal recognizance bond, which means that he didn't even have to pay any money, which means that he doesn't have to, he could avoid the whole thing. He just never has to go back to Colorado.
The law enforcement and the legal system are notorious for being awful at dealing with instances like this.
Absolutely.
It is known, and that's why I feel like we need to just figure out alternatives for dealing with these kinds of things, because I mean obviously like some but with the instances of what I was talking about with Sarah, sometimes there's a thing where it's like okay to try to work it out in your own communities, like how you can coexist, but not with this guy. This sounds like a very different kinds of scenario. So it's just like how do we deal with getting rid of people like that, or keeping them away from you? And I feel like something that I've thought about before, I don't like the police at all. I don't like the police, but I feel like there needs to be like a femme squad, and not even just a femme squad, because also victims who are not women experience this minimization also.
I had to have a female cop when my ex before Dan, Matt Samiotis, I'll say his fucking name, I don't care. When he like almost broke my ribs and then I had trouble breathing and stuff and whatever. And I was like, oh, I need to go to the doctor. Like I woke up like with him like on top of me, and I almost like, you ever feel that sort of like out of body experience? Like you're almost like looking down at yourself. Like you're just like, is this fucking happening? Like what the fuck is happening? And I reached over to my phone and my friend had texted me, and she was like, she just felt like something was wrong because like we were out the night before, like, you know, like, but like I had been kind of telling people like, you know, I don't really feel safe in this thing and I should get out. And like she texted me and he fucking like slapped my phone away, and he was just like, you're not having anyone over tonight, you're not going anywhere. And I like woke up the next day and I still felt like shit, and I was just like, I'm gonna go to the doctor, I need to, like, I don't feel good. And he was like, it's probably because you started smoking again. And I went to work that day and I felt awful. I felt so, so awful. And I finally, I was just like, you know what? Like, I talked to my boss, who is also a survivor. Her best friend helped throw her shitty abusive ex's mattress in the dumpster and lit it on fire. I mean, like, she said, you know, she was like, hey, I think you need to go to the doctor. I think you don't feel well right now. And, like, you know, take the time off, like, go, like, get yourself checked out. And, you know, when you're in that, I was with him for 6 years. When you're in that situation for so long, you're just like, you, like, it's so hard to talk about. Like, there's almost like this, like shame around it. Like, oh, I shouldn't have been out, or I shouldn't have, like, done that. And it's just like, that's not your fucking fault. Like,
I know that he has a temper. I shouldn't have provoked him.
Right.
I should have, like, been soberer
but
than him.
But he fucking assaulted you, and he should be held accountable for that. And, like,
exactly.
Even, like, I went to the doctor, and they, like, you know, like, I just went to this clinic because, like, I didn't have insurance at the time. And I was like, I don't know, like, my ribs hurt, and, like, maybe it's because I started smoking. And I was, like, thinking about, like, all these, like, the things that he was telling me. And then I just, like, started crying, and they're like, what's really going on? And they were like, okay, we're gonna give you, like, some x-rays and stuff and, like, whatever. And I'm still, like, dealing with paying that debt off. And, you know, like, they did check me out, like, in that sense. They were like, okay, like, you have, like, your ribs are fucked up, like, you should report this to the police, like, you should actually go to the hospital, you should get, you know, a rape kit done, like, you should take all these steps if you, you know, if you want to press charges or get, like, some kind of restraining order or anything like that. And even that, even, like, just going there and talk and, like, having to talk to the cops, and, like, yeah, it does seem so cold, but they're like, sorry if this seems like I'm being very blunt, but it's like, we have to, like, take a report, and, like, we have to, like, try to separate the emotional from, like, the law. And it's, like, hard when you just went through something like that. It's so hard to separate that.
That's the problem I have with it. I don't think that we should be separating the emotion from the law. I think that that's I think that's straight up definition patriarchal culture. And what I think that we need to have is the point I was going to make, is we need to have like a femme squad, or like a squad of extra sensitive people who are not connected to the police, who are a private organization or a non-for-profit or whatever the fuck. I don't know how I feel about non-for-profits. Besides
that's what I mean. The fact that the Rise Above Violence girls, the women, like, they all knew my case. All of them, everybody who worked there, they were the ones who were, like, hounding, you know, the cops, and, like, pursuing all the different leads and making sure I was okay. Like, they were the most effective ones, and they were the ones that were most, like, empathetic to me. You know, they didn't make me feel like I had to be cold and clinical about what had happened to me.
Right.
Because it's also, and that's another thing, is like, I found a lawyer, a woman lawyer who deals with domestic violence in New York, because I wanted to know what to do when I got back there, because he has family and friends, he has cop friends there. So I talked to her, thinking that she would be more sympathetic and empathetic to my situation.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically said she was really cold, and she was really, like, just didn't have time for me. And she's like, basically, if you don't have a broken bone, I can't make any money off of you, so no one's going to take your case. And I'm like, but what about emotional damage? What about psychological damage? Like, I have dreams now. Like, I think
trauma
coming
dreams
after me
are the fucking
worst.
I
had a dream that I was forced to drive him somewhere. His son was, like, in my dream, he was like, oh, you have to go pick him up over here and drive him over there. And I did. I did it in my fucking dream. Like, what the fuck kind of shit is that? I've been crying on and off for, like, since this happened. I've just been, like, going, oscillating between, like, go to jail, fuck you, and then just kind of, like, everything is useless. My brain is all discombobulated, and I can't, and I just want to die, just to simplify matters, you know? Like, I've just been, like, I've been walking around just, like, shrieking. I was driving away and just, like, just crying. Like, that's, and I know that this has already, like, he's already had, like, lasting effects on my psyche just from, like, the 6 years that we were together.
Right.
But what the hell is going to be the fallout from this? Why is that not count? Why does that not matter? Why is it a broken bone that's so much more important than my emotional and psychological well-being
for
the rest of my life?
I want to make two points. First, I'm going to finish my point about the femme squad I was talking about, where they actually were.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No, it's okay. No, don't be sorry.
Yeah,
okay. The point I want to make is that it should be like an app or something where you just press a button and people from the squad will show up.
Yeah.
Like, to meet with you and the cops, so they're the go-between, and they're there, and they know all the paperwork, because the cops are also notorious for not filing the paperwork very well for these kinds of cases. So they show up, and they make sure this gets filed correctly. And also, that's something that I think should exist, although I would like to abolish the police and replace them with something like the femme squad. But besides the point is, I love your yes. But besides the point of that, I do think that to address the long-term trauma is something that people don't understand. And that's what I keep saying. I said it over and over on What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn, is that the minimization and the not believing and all that ties into a larger part of the abuse. Like, there's the abuse itself, and then there's the after, and then there's the part where you weren't sure if it was real. There were the trauma from the rationalization and the trauma from other people trying to get you to continue to rationalize. So it's so hard to just acknowledge what happened to you and allow it to be real within yourself. And I also think that when it affects you for the rest of your life. So something that I have to say about all of that is being a survivor is what made me an activist. And that's something that, like, somebody actually posted. I posted, like, why do we minimize the experiences of survivors? And I wrote that, somebody else wrote, because they fall in love with their own trauma. And you know what? Like, in some ways, I am in love with my own trauma. And what I have to say about that is, like, I don't romanticize it. What I mean is that I have this trauma and I've been abused, but now I'm able to see abuse in all these sideways ways that other people don't see. Some people do, but some people don't. You know, I see abuse everywhere. I see it on a micro level. I see it on a macro level. I see the abuse of marginalized groups. I now have eyes that I did not have before. And
it's like your experience allows you to be like empathetic and to be like, also, you know, you're a fucking femme squad, you know, like
we all are.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I think that it is in a large way a women's issue, sexual assault and abuse and everything, but this is not to minimize people who aren't, because they have those experiences too. And I hate minimizing that, because I feel like that's been happening with the Me Too thing. But I also want to say that I think that I would never give up. What I want to say is, if we're going to build a culture that liberates survivors, I think that we must, if we're going to build a culture that liberates survivors, we must start allowing ourselves to have these eyes. And I think that's part of the whole culture of people denying themselves the experience or denying themselves the truth about that experience, is they don't get these eyes. And when we develop these eyes, that is when we'll be able to communicate more openly with one another. And then I think we can have a culture that allows us to talk about trauma and allows us to talk about abuse, and it's not seen as weak or childish.
It's seen as a healing process, you know?
I think, and I've been thinking, this is something that I've been feeling.
Hello?
And that's the fact that it took this experience for me to develop those eyes, you know, because, like, look, before this, he was always beating me. Like, it was never this bad. I'm not going to, like, lie. It started with, like, a little shove here, a little shove there, and then a bigger shove, and then suddenly he's kicking me in the head. But I have a helmet on, so it's not that bad, you know, like, things like that. But it never, up until the point where his fist was connecting with my face repeatedly, I didn't grasp it. I didn't see those things as all connected, as part of one thing. I didn't connect the psychological abuse, the emotional, the minimizing, the denying, the deflecting. I didn't put that all in the same bubble. And now I do. Like, now I see it and now I realize it. And one of the things that I've concluded from this is that I have been a bad friend because of the fact that I didn't see, to my other girlfriends who have been going through this thing. You know, I have a friend who was abusive to his girlfriend, like emotionally and physically. Like he would just like wake up and like just kick her out of bed and be like, get the fuck out of my bed. Like who the fuck does that? Yeah. You know? And like just like randomly fly off on a rage and like blame her for everything, like things that are clearly nothing to do with her.
Right.
Just blame her for stuff like that. And I just kind of like, I tried to be Switzerland because mm-hmm. A, I was rationalizing my own situation like that with Robert, and B, because it was my friend. The abuser was my friend, one of my best friends. And I didn't know how to reconcile that. And I'm like, you know what? Since I don't know how to reconcile that, I'm just going to leave it up to her. And then she can reconcile it for herself. And because of that, she stayed with him for 3 years. And now he has another girlfriend who's another one of my friends. And he's doing the same thing to her. And he's been escalating his physical abuse with her and minimizing it. Like the following day, he would come cry to her and be like, I'm so sorry. Oh. I don't want to be that guy.
And that's classic
and then,
abuse.
Like, and then a week later, it's like, well, you shouldn't have left. You totally blew that out of proportion. So which one is it, bro? Is it, I'm sorry, I'm crying, I don't want to be that guy? Or is it that I blew it out of proportion? Which one is it?
You know? I would have he'd play the suicide card. That was a fucked up thing to do.
What's a suicide
like,
card?
Like, if I left him, that he would kill himself, even though. And, you know, with Dan, my recent ex, I mean, with Matt, it wasn't always like the physical stuff. It was just like the put downs, you know, like, oh, you know, like I was working full time. I was like going to school full time. I was like paying my way through, you know, I was like doing all these things. And like he would like say these like really shitty things to me when he was drunk. And it took one friend of mine in college to be like, hey, that's not okay. Like you should like recognize that. And like, you know, and it took me, I was like, well, you know, like, you know, I've been through worse, like whatever. They're just like, you know, he's just being sarcastic. We just joke around, like we're just mean to each other. Like it's fun. But like I would fucking leave crying, and then like I would wake up feeling like shit, and I began to wonder, hey, when I was fucked up, like did he drug me? Like has he raped me before? And I just blocked it out. Like, you know, and I think it's important to like warn your fellow sisters, like, hey, this guy like isn't okay. And then like, you know, it was like it started with the little things, like the put downs and whatever. And so like I started to see that in Dan. And so I was just like, I mean, thank God, like it's almost like, you know, I'm not happy that happened to me, but like I kind of like realized fucking what was going on, and I didn't need to do it anymore. I didn't need to escalate, and it didn't need to go further, and it would be better if we just ended it, you know. So
and I just want to say we have like 2 minutes left, so I just want to say that this has been incredibly powerful, and I appreciate you both coming on here and sharing your stories and talking about the systems that have failed you and allowing yourself to be part of the conversations of how we can improve and how we can help each other and how we can warn each other about these situations, and also just the acknowledgement of how we need to hold men and other abusive people accountable. And mm-hmm. you've been listening to What Would Save the World on Radio Free Brooklyn. You can always email me at TOOK@radiofreebrooklyn.com. You can also follow on Twitter, the number 2KEDALOW. You can engage in the conversation after the show on there. And we can continue talking about this. But I want to say thank you so much, Arena. Thank you so much, Sarah. If either of you have anything to say while we have about a minute left. So, Sarah, you said some stuff I want to see. Arena, do you have anything to say before we go? And then we'll go back to you, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that the biggest thing that I took away from this is that I don't think we should be as friends to our, you know, to the people that are kind of going through something similar, even if it's just like shoving, even if it's just like mean words and you don't think that it's that bad. Like there is no Switzerland. Because by being Switzerland, you're normalizing the behavior. And I think that it's like the thing that I learned the most is that I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to normalize my friend's abuse of my other friend, and I'm taking a side. I'm going to take a side every single time that this happens, even if it like causes, you know, issues with me and my personal life, even if it's detrimental to me, because I don't think that's fair, and I think it's selfish to try and be Switzerland.
I agree with you. Don't be fucking Switzerland, people listening. But we got about 10 seconds left. Mm-hmm. So Sarah, do you got anything you want to say real quick?
Also, don't be afraid to fucking speak out. And if you need to talk to someone, I'm here. And, you know, it